not that exciting. So your news is far more interesting than mine. Well, we have a special show today. So Robert Taylor,
hello.
Everybody. So Robert Taylor, you're a writer, obviously. You've written for DreamWorks, or you work for DreamWorks, is that right? Or you have worked for them?
I worked for them on the first 8 seasons of Spirit Riding Free, and then I worked on the first season of Netflix's Grace and Frankie.
So are you just a free agent at this point, working?
Yeah, I am a free agent working on that super secret project for MRC and Rideback and Glenn Mazzara.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah, and you have quite a track record. I saw you spent some time with Blakesley down in on his little Criterion tour.
I could not believe that David was even better in person than he was over the Skype connection. He is genuinely one of the best human beings I have ever met in my life, and I took him to the AFI archives.
I saw that,
and I have never seen such joy on a human being before. Like, during...
Major FOMO for that.
Like, when they took him up to the Martin Scorsese archives, his eyes just, they started glistening as if it was, like, a third act of a romance movie.
That is awesome. Yeah, I saw he looked at some Kubrick, too, if I remember. Was it 2001?
Yeah, there's a library with all of these, scripts from production throughout history, and so he just grabbed Apocalypse Now in 2001 and was going through a bunch of them, and I showed him this old Double Indemnity script that someone, I have no idea who it was, but had written in the margins because it was done during production, Stanwyck's being such a bitch today.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't that every day? Come on. I'm sure there were worse days than others.
She was married to Robert Taylor, so I must stand for her, despite the fact that Robert Taylor, by all accounts, was a dirtbag.
Yeah, pretty common name, too, I bet. what we're going to talk about is the best 6 months, or the best first half of the year on Criterion, and we're going through June, so really we're covering the first 6 months of the year. So that eliminates some of the great July and August, which are both fantastic months. I've been on vacation. I just got back, and usually I shout out the Patreons, but we don't have any new ones. So nobody signed up in the time I was gone, so let's get some more. And we did give out some rewards. I know you're a Patreon. You're overdue to get something.
No, I got the thing last year, so...
That's a while ago.
I am happy to take whatever you want, but I would rather new people sign up and then they get the presents.
That's very generous of you. Well, Anthony won a gift certificate, and Phil won a Criterion, and Daniel Forsley won a Criterion.
Woo!
So that was just a moment, so congrats, guys. Before we get into the best of the year, I know you have a story. I feel like I'm on, like, we're doing Johnny Carson or something, but because I know the story you're about to talk about, because we've been following this in our social media for a good while now. But you have a Mulvaney story. Are you allowed to share this, or do you want to share this?
I'm perfectly happy to share it. So I had been in a relationship, and I love Umbrellas of Cherbourg. Like, it is one of my top 5 films of all time. I have had screenings over at my house, and I have the huge poster up on my wall. So one would think that I would want to share this with people who I love, and I did. I took the Blu-ray/DVD out of the Jacques Demy box set and gave it to my boyfriend at the time. And then I found out that he was cheating on me. So I immediately... Thanks. I know, it's very sad. And also, why? Why? I'm such a delightful human being.
I know. I would never cheat on you, Robert.
Thank you, Aaron. I appreciate that.
I am married, though, so I guess by default I am cheating on anybody I get in a relationship with. But anyway, I digress. Please, go ahead.
So I found out that he had been cheating on me, so I immediately cut off all contact, you know, burned the bridge, let the bridge fall into the river. And then I remembered about the disc and was like, oh, crap, what do I do? And so I went on to social media and I said, should I A, just buy the regular Blu-ray and stick it in there and hope that every time I went to it, I was not reminded of this horrible time in my life. B, just rebuy the box set. Or C, break into his apartment and take back what was mine. And I'm not very good at doing illegal things because I have never done so.
And, would not condone that.
And also, like, I've seen Rafifi. It never ends well. So...
yeah. Well, that was during the code, so, you know, we're post-code now. And anyway, I would not recommend you robbing anybody.
I agree. And also now there is not a paper trail, but a word trail. So,
oh, yeah.
So I was about to buy the Blu-ray set, and someone on, I think it was Criterion Now, said, hey, why don't you just email Mulvaney and throw yourself at his mercy? And so I did. And then Mulvaney said, sure, I will send you a new copy of the disc. And he did with a cute little button. And he, quote unquote, could not have right. been sweeter or more kind. And now I have a complete Jacques Demy set again. And my faith in love has been restored by Criterion, which...
John Mulvaney is a dream. John Mulvaney would not cheat on you.
No, he would never cheat on me. I should see if he's single.
Or she. You might want to ask for his number. Well, I'm sorry that happened to you. The whole other, what led to this incident, that's probably not fun. And it's, I mean, the circumstances make it an interesting story, but probably tough for you to share. But that is a happy ending. So so you actually kind of... Well, I'm not going to spoil Umbrellas of Cherbourg, but a different ending, I'll say.
Happier ending than the movie.
Happier ending.
Plus, it's not... It's better than my apartment got flooded and my entire collection is gone. So, yeah.
And that happened, too. So you've had some bad luck, and then... So this was a little bit of good luck. You got one disc out of your bad luck, but and I know your apartment was flooded and you lost your collection, but you did get an insurance check for the entire thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It was approximately like 2/3 of what I actually thought I should get, but still, it was a nice check.
Coming from the world of insurance, I get that you're never I don't think you'll ever get what you. And I think part of that is because people will just put down, they'll make shit up. So, I'm not saying people are liars, but people are liars.
That said, happy endings all around, so let's let's not be too upset.
And now when you go get the box set, you'll be reminded of a good memory, of the benevolence of John Mulvaney, you know, this real human being.
probably very handsome.
I'm sure, dashing. So I want people on the Facebook group to post pictures of John Mulvaney and what you expect he looks like.
To me, he looks like the perfect man, Andrew Garfield.
Okay, I was thinking James Dean. but you know, they're not too different. I actually just saw Garfield in something. What was that? That doesn't matter. let's talk about Criterions, man. That's what we have you here for, right?
Yes, I am so excited. I have watched every upgrade and every new disc this year, except for Berlin Alexanderplatz, because I just can't.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And I kind of buried the lead. I forgot I should... You have this Criterion Odyssey, and you haven't talked about that yet. So why don't you... that's why you've seen all the releases. Why don't you just mention that, if you don't mind?
Yeah, on my blog, I just decided I would watch every major release over the course of a calendar year, because I was rebuilding my collection, and I thought, what better way to get back into actual media than checking out everything that Criterion had to offer. And it's been... just a dream. There's been like a few rotten apples so far in the year, but genuinely, I've probably discovered 5 or 6 movies that I plan to take forward with me for the rest of my life. Like, I love them so much. Yeah. And even the misses are interesting misses.
I would say I'm curious which misses you... I think you didn't like the Dumonts, right?
No, I thought that I thought the first one was okay. I really, really liked, La Humanité. Okay. Death in Venice didn't work for me, but I appreciated Death in Venice. Let's see, what else? Police Story 2 was ableist, right, and really, really concerning, and I don't know why they decided to do it. And Funny Games was not for me, but I can appreciate people who say it is. And Swing Time, I have no idea. And someone mentioned this on a previous show, so I won't harp on it as well. Why? Why would you pick the racist one as the first one to release in the collection, right? Why not Top Hat?
Why the racist one? Hashtag. Good question. I don't know. That was startling to see. Your other points, hold your thought, because I think that's going to come up in our little conversation, but I'll just say that we have a few categories. We have our favorite film.
We should probably save that one to last, right?
Let's save that one for last, yeah. I should also mention that as we're recording, I posted this all in the Facebook group, so people are chiming on theirs, so I'll do my best to shout some people out as they choose theirs. But we have a favorite film, which we'll do last. So, and then we also have favorite upgrade, which I just saw that I got completely wrong on the list, and Michael Hutchins has corrected me. So, in other words, it's just pretty much another normal day. favorite cover, favorite discovery, which is just a film new to us. You mentioned you had about five. I had probably about the same amount.
Mm-hmm.
Then our wish list come true, and then the best month of the year from January to May, and there were some good ones. And we have our favorites, but we also have a couple runners up, so we'll end up, I think, covering just about every film from the month, or from the half a year so far.
I know, it's really lucky that it's the two of us, so we have a little time to talk about the runners up.
A little time, yes. And this might be something that might be fun to revisit in the next couple episodes. But obviously, you know, time's going to pass, and we'll lose this moment. But we'll do a best of the year too, and maybe to supplement the Criterion Cast. So I feel like I should do a drum roll here, but that would be a really bad mic sound. So I'm just going to say drum roll, and let's get to favorite upgrade. And I'll start with you, Robert.
My favorite upgrade of the year is Notorious, with a runner-up being the three films by Ingmar Bergman. For the runner-up, I mean, everyone has the Bergman box set. If you don't have the Bergman box set, what's wrong with you at this point? It's been back in stock twice now. Just do it. It's worth it. That said, it's a beautiful box, isn't it? Like,
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The spider on the front of it is incredible, and the three films themselves are among his best, and to say that it's among his best really means just three unparalleled masterpieces. And then, for Notorious, I loved it, right? It's, you could say that Vertigo is Hitchcock's most personal movie. You could argue, I would argue that Rear Window is my favorite Hitchcock movie, but for me, I think Notorious is his most perfect Hitchcock film, right? It is his best leading man, it's his best leading lady, it is his best screenwriter, although you could argue Ernest Lehman, maybe, but it's, everything is working on all cylinders, perfect, and it's the release itself, great upgrade. It's one of the only times when I have listened to those radio adaptations and really, really enjoyed it.
that's awesome. Yeah, it was. We had an episode of Close Up about that with Mark and Jill and Wade. Sorry, Wade, forgot you for a second. Notorious is one of my favorites. And we had a little confusion with the with this category because Do the Right Thing is a big one, but that's July.
That would have been my choice, yes.
Yeah, I think both of us were in agreement there. In fact, I haven't even opened it, but just by having it, it's up there. I'd say the upgrades, there have been quite a few. I think part of it, I think this conspiracy theory is that they were including a few to buy time until Spine 1000. So there have been some, and Michael did correct me, so I actually changed my runners up. But mine is also Notorious. I think Notorious, the way you characterize it is pretty much correct. It's like the quintessential 40s Hitchcock film, I'd say. Really just the best of everything Hitchcock in that era. And actually Selznick. In fact, I argued that this was... I'm sorry, that was Rebecca. So, yeah, well...
Selznick was hands-off on this one.
Selznick was hands-off. I think Rebecca was the best of Selznick. I think Selznick and Hitchcock checked each other there, so that we got the best of both of them for that one, but it doesn't really feel like a Selznick or a Hitchcock picture. This one feels like totally a Hitchcock picture, and it feels like he was hitting the stride. So, so this wasn't really an upgrade. It was a reissue with new supplements. It was a stacked disc, so it wasn't just let's rubber stamp this what they had on the previous disc, which was a I believe it was a twofer with Spellbound, right?
They came out one after the other. Was there a third one that came out as well? No, it was just those two.
I believe it was those two. And my runner-up, so I actually pivoted. I had Stranger in Paradise, which I haven't watched yet, but I just, I haven't rewatched because I've seen it a couple times. But that's the grouping, that's probably one of my favorites. And I put House of Games. You mentioned the Bergman, and that's tough because the Bergman titles are in the Bergman box set, and I agree that everybody should have that. And I don't know if you consider it an upgrade. Like, for instance, Shame is a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first time it came out on standalone disc, and it's not an upgrade of what's in the Bergman box set because it's really the same thing. But you can't really choose that, and I haven't watched the film trilogy by Bergman either, and I'm not choosing Magic Flute because why would I? So House of Games is not the best movie. It won't make any of these other lists, but it was entertaining, and I really appreciated the commentary. Even though I'm forgetting his name, the magician.
Ricky J.
Yep. So great, and just seeing him, and I've talked about it on the show before, so I won't go further into that. But yeah, I did enjoy that upgrade a lot more than I expected. The commentary and the supplements more than the film itself, with the film.
I agree. Does it have someone had mentioned on the Criterion Now page that it's misprinted on the front of the disc? It says The House of Games as opposed to House of Games. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that might have been a different group, but I'm not sure. But yeah, no, it does. I think that somebody did call that out, and they were noted that that's not the film title. That's the poker chip, because in the film, and I didn't cross reference the film, so I could be inaccurate here. But in the film, the chip that they give it says The House of Games, whereas the movie is just House of Games.
Ah, so we are calling out a problem that doesn't exist. Criterion was sitting there snicker, snicker, snicker.
we might be a little too particular about this one. I'm not going to get hung up on, even if it wasn't an error. I didn't notice it. So nobody noticed it for a few months. So let's get to favorite cover. Why don't you go ahead and start, Robert?
My favorite cover of the year is War and Peace. I think that it covers the war incredibly well. I think it covers the peace incredibly well. You can't shame anything for having a dancing cover. Am I right? It's such a beautiful, beautiful sketch. And yeah, it genuinely captures the we're throwing everything in, including the kitchen sinkness of the film itself. Yeah. It makes me happy every single time I look at it. So how can I not choose that as the favorite cover? That said, I think, Aaron, you and I both agree that the best cover of the year has yet to be released, and it's Gold Polyester.
I am on board with that. I'm surprised that in our pre-discussions that didn't come up. Actually, before we get too far, I just want to shout out that a bunch of people in the group had Notorious as their favorite upgrade, so that seems to be almost the universal choice. Jesse had Stranger Than Paradise, then Shelley, Nick, Michael, Rod, Jared, Fred. Pretty much everybody else had Notorious. So, you know what that means, Robert?
Great minds think alike.
Yep, it means that we're right. We got this one. So, yes, War and Peace. It's busy, but I love the cover as well.
Yeah.
Great cover.
My two runners-up are, I love the three paintings for Police Story. They're very fun, they're very colorful, and one that's not noticed, and this is probably the most outstanding part of the entire release, is I love the noir-ish reds and blacks of the In the Heat of the Night cover.
I like that. There's a lot of good, great covers this month. And we didn't choose Blue Velvet. In fact, Michael Hutchins just chimed in, and he said that he chose Blue Velvet because he was going for the whole package. Because the cover, it looks remarkable, but it's really a nice packaging. Although he said that he thinks the Coker trilogy is going to be the package of the year, and you know, we'll see what we get with Spine 1000. But I'm thinking that looks pretty exquisite as well. So my favorite cover was, drumroll, Notorious again. In fact, you're going to notice a little theme with my runners up. This is an illustration from the film, and I don't have it in front of me. I forget who did it. It might have been. Oh no, it was Greg Ruth, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Without actually knowing, but you said it with like dignity, so I'm going to say you were correct.
So I have that brash self-confidence. Yep. that doesn't matter if I'm wrong. And I'm pretty sure it is, because he did those process prints and he sold a few of them. So if I'm not, then he took a lot of license there. So yeah, and I think it's a gorgeous illustration. I think he's really one of the best illustrators working today. Maybe the best. I'd say Caitlin as well, although she had a little controversy with her cover lately. But
it is Greg Ruth. Which cover was controversial?
It was the one that hasn't Clooney Brown that hasn't come out yet.
Oh, the changes they made to it when they changed it black and white, I think, was night and day. Like, it's so much better now. I like it a lot.
I like it a lot now too. So the theme with mine are, they're really part of the film. So my runner up was The Heiress.
Beautiful cover.
It is beautiful, and it's just a still of de Havilland, but. Yeah, it's a still from the film, and then but it's an illustrated sort of. I don't have it in front of me, but it almost seems like impressionistic. Does that sound right?
Well, it's the if she was sewing a thing of herself, right?
That's what it was. Yes. Oh yeah, great.
And what I love about her expression is she seems like she's smiling, and the closer you look, the more you realize, oh, she's not actually smiling. It's fake.
It totally goes with the theme of the movie. She's kind of has that nervous affectation. And then my other runner-up is The Kid Brother, which is a still from the film and has been the same artist. I forget the name of the artist, but he's done the other Harold Lloyd titles. And they work. They're just they capture the essence of the film, and they're enjoyable to look at. And sometimes still shots work. Sometimes they don't. But yeah, the cover games have been pretty good, and we have a lot more good stuff to come.
It's a testament to how good 2019 has been that The Kid Brother appears on none of these for me, and yep. I loved it so much.
Same here. I was thinking that when I put it on for cover, and it's not the obligatory got to slot it in somewhere, but yeah, it's a great movie, and it has been quite a year. So next we have. Oh, let me just look at the group to see what they're saying for covers. There's some To Sleep with Anger, Nick, and then Michael called out Hedwig.
Hedwig was a great cover. So was To Sleep with Anger.
And let's see. Also, Detour, which I think was a really interesting cover. Rod said that, and then Shelley also said Hedwig, and. Interesting. Jesse said one sings, the other doesn't, which I really like as a cover, and I'm surprised that we didn't put that on our lists. Really, again, good covers. So the next category is favorite discovery, and for me, that's just a film that I wasn't expecting. There's always a lot of these every year. So I did not put Wanda on here because it had a high reputation. Didn't put War and Peace on here, even though for me, these were both discoveries that I really enjoyed. So these are the ones that kind of caught me out of nowhere, that I had nothing, they weren't really buzzed about. So if you don't mind, since we already started, I'll give my main one. So mine was L'Humanité. Is that how you say it?
If it's not, we are owning it. We are saying that this is how it's done.
I'm not taking the brash confidence for that, for my French pronunciation. Yeah, I was really stunned by the Dumont. In fact, is there an airplane going ahead overhead? Sorry, I can't help that. But yeah, it is shocking, and I know that a lot of people had trouble with it. But for me, it was revelatory, and for a shocking film, you mentioned that Funny Games didn't work for you, and I totally get that. I love Funny Games, but but it shocks, you know, it's upsetting sometimes. And this is too, but there were such dense characters, and it actually, you know, it paid off in a way that I won't get into, but yeah, it kind of contributed to the character development, their failings, you could say, their weaknesses. And so go ahead, if you want to comment on that, or if you want to go ahead and give your favorite discovery.
I thought it was great as well. I was a little iffy on the life of Jesus. It felt a little, we've seen it 14,000 times before, but I very, very, very much enjoyed La Humanité, and the central performance was incredible. It was a yes. thing where he's not acting well, but it's perfect for the character.
And it's total neorealistic style. He was an amateur, so I think a lot of those personality quirks were probably his own. But it completely worked, you know, this understated performance. And in fact, I haven't gone through the list, but I would say that if we were going to put performance of the year as a category, he would be on the short list, maybe at the very top.
He's got to be up there, him and Judy Davis.
Yeah, or maybe Barbara Loden. So what's your favorite discovery?
Well, do you want to say what your runners-up are?
No, go ahead, because I know that we are going to cross over.
Okay, so
you're about to say one of them, so go ahead.
Yeah, my favorite discovery of the year was Diamonds of the Night, a movie I had never heard of. Like you, I could have chosen War and Peace, which I had never seen before, and I could have chosen Wanda, which I didn't see before, but I had heard of them before. And I had heard of their reputation, so I thought it would be unfair to choose those two. Diamonds of the Night, what blew me out of the water. That opening scene, the 4-minute shot of them crawling up a mountain, running from gunfire, the new wave, weird editing, and the performances, and the imagery, it had me from go, and it genuinely just sort of hit me like a sledgehammer to the gut. All the way through, yeah. As soon as I finished it, I wanted to watch it again. And the package itself is great. I love the Criterion recognized that mm-hmm. the movie is so special, and even though it probably wouldn't have been a big seller for them, they wanted to do right by it. So the interview with the director, incredible. The interview with the expert on the Czech New Wave was also very, very important, and it gave me a lot more admiration for the film, even though I had a ton to begin with. And his short film. Did you watch the short film about the bread?
You know, I don't think I did.
Okay.
I did.
It's 10 minutes, and it's almost as good as the feature itself. And these short films are pretty bad normally that they put in them.
Sometimes. Sometimes they're good. That actually has been a big discovery. I've heard just talked about elsewhere. I'm just kind of scanning the list, and not a lot of people put it on their list for this project. But I agree, and I think just what's going to pay off with this Czech deal that they got. You're probably not going to see a wave, pun intended, wave of Czech films coming out, but I think they'll parcel them out. But there's so many gems in that grouping, and I think a lot of discoveries to come. So yeah, that was one of my runners-up, so great description. I'll just leave that there. My other one was La Vérité, which I don't think got another mention, and there's another airplane. What's going on today?
I think it might be a helicopter circling. Have you done something illegal?
I have not. Yeah, it's like Goodfellas. This is an airplane. We do have an army base nearby, so just have to deal. Sorry. La Vérité, great courtroom drama, great performance. I've talked about it on the show, so I won't belabor it. But Clouseau is really a special director, and it's nice to get one of his lesser-known works on Criterion. And what are your runners-up?
My runners-up are My Brilliant Career, which I had never heard of, and my heart loves that movie. I think it's beautiful. Yeah. Judy Davis, you know, you can't go wrong with her. And, I mean, she did do the starter wife for TNT, so I suppose you could do wrong with her. But she's fantastic here. And then 24 Frames, which when I read the description and knew that that would be the first movie I would be covering for my Criterion Odyssey, I was nervous as hell.
Yeah.
But there's something so brilliant and beautiful about a movie where it is what you give it. You watch mm-hmm. it, and it's all about the way you react to these sometimes nothing scenes, and you creating the narrative yourself around them. I very much appreciated it, and I thought it was a wonderful sort of afterthought to a beautiful career.
Yeah, and by the way, I also loved My Brilliant Career, and I also loved 24 Frames. So again, that's there's so many discoveries this year. 24 Frames, I expected it to be less intriguing than it was, just because of the way it was advertised. You know, and as you know, the format, you read the description, and you're expecting to just fall asleep. In fact, I think I put it on first in the middle of the night when I just happened to wake up, and so I was hoping for like it to work like a sleeping pill, and I ended up watching about an hour of it. Really, really special film. My Brilliant Career, again, yeah, out of nowhere. So, yeah, great year so far. And let me just look at the... So there's Yapone, there's Wanda, is it Discovery for some people, Detour, that was for Jesse, and Shelley had Wanda. Let's see, Rod had Hedwig, so Hedwig's coming up a little bit. Michael agreed with me on La Vérité. And his discovery, and then Fred's discovery was Wanda. So yeah, there's getting some getting some love, and I'm laughing at Fred's. He called Michael out for cheating. So anyway, cheating has become a theme here. Sorry, Robert. So how about wish lists come true? I love this category because we have our wish lists, and in fact, I'll just tease, we're going to do a little something special with wish lists in the near future on the show.
Ooh. But,
yeah, it's going to be cool. But it's one of those where you really want to see it, and when it gets announced, you just are thrilled, gratified. So go ahead, Robert. What was yours?
Oh, no, you go first. I've been going first aside from the last one, so by all means.
Okay, well, I will just say that yours was also, would have been on my list, but because I'd heard some great things. But mine was Blue Velvet. I think we kind of knew it was coming. I think it's sublime. It's just a fantastic film. David Lynch is... excuse me. I'm losing my voice. David... I think I lost my voice. Why don't you go ahead, Robert?
All right. And you can't drink soda. Oh, God.
I can drink soda. Your water's I just can't off. Pee.
Okay. So, mine is War and Peace. I have been waiting and waiting and waiting for a... And now there is some sort of accident outside my apartment.
This is the background noise episode.
There's multiple beeps. It's fine. So
I hear, yeah.
War and Peace is my wish list come true. It would have been Blue Velvet, but I feel like there are other great editions of Blue Velvet out there. And War and Peace has never had a fantastic release like this. I have been waiting for years and years and years to see this movie, and boy, did it explode my expectations in the best way possible. So that is why I chose War and Peace. 7 hours and 20-some minutes did not feel that... Well, it did, but in a good way.
Yeah, no, I totally... It was 7 hours and 20 minutes of bliss, and I got through mine quite quickly as well. I mean, quickly. You know, they're all 7 hours and 20 minutes, but I think mine was over a few days where I, you know, Alexander Platz is going to take me longer. I still have not gotten through. I'm still working on that one. Well, my runner-up was Shame. So that's, again, it's kind of, I put an asterisk next to it because it's one of those that we already got. So, but, and I've been wanting it for a while. In fact, I think I've been banging the drum on this show for years to get Shame. I think it's just a special Bergman, and I'm glad we have it. But we already had it, so it's a little bit of a cheat. And then The Heiress. The Heiress is a film that I love, and I was thrilled to get it back and to watch it again. It was my first time watching it outside of film class, and it held up. So, and that's a runner-up of yours as well, right?
Yes. Did you call that out? All I will add is that I concur.
That's good. And then we had Best Month. We were going to do Best Supplement, but that's too difficult. I think I need more time. But what's your favorite month of the year?
My favorite month is June. You can't beat the Ingmar Bergman trilogy. As I said, even though I didn't like The Life of Jesus, I appreciated it. I very much enjoyed La Humanité. Can't we just call it humanity?
Let's do that, yeah.
Hedwig is just a dream. The music's great. The central performance is beautiful. And as I said, War and Peace is something I've been waiting for years and years and years to come out, and then it finally did, so I was very happy. Swing Time is a bit of a blot in the month, but what can you do?
Aside from that one sequence, I think Swing Time was fine. But yeah, it's the one that's difficult to talk about. There's another airplane. Yeah, mine was May, and that has the Eras Funny Games, which I mentioned is a special movie to me. Yeah, they're really doing some flying today. Also, One Sings the Other Doesn't, Blue Velvet. Wow, I think they're over my house. Can you hear that?
Yes. But again, a Varda musical did not make our list. That's how good 2019 has been.
That's right. And it's almost an afterthought is Let the Sunshine In is also on my list, but or is in that month. That one was, I wouldn't say a dud, but compared to everything else, it just doesn't have that same, it's not on the same level as even like some of the lesser titles. But yeah, everything else, it was a pretty special month. I'm looking at the group, and pretty much everybody is either May or June, so I think we're right again. So mm-hmm. Good job, Robert.
Let the sunshine in, and more like close the curtains and go to bed, am I right?
Yeah, that's it. Rod did say March, so what was a March? March was The Kid Brother, Magic Flute, Detour, Wanda, I Want to Hold Your Hand, and Yapone. So yeah, there's some good stuff there. I'm going to say, not that I like to hate, I don't not want to be negative here, but I think my least favorite was I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Yeah, it was. I disliked, for example, Let the Sunshine In more, but I Want to Hold Your Hand was disposable at best. I feel as if the only reason it is in the collection is because of a supplement, not even the film itself. Yeah. It's the Zemeckis, Bob Gale, Steven Spielberg conversation, which is fantastic.
But it was interesting, yeah. And I should also mention that we didn't include a few titles. Mikey and Nikki, I think, was a good discovery for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't mention To Sleep With Anger, which was quite a discovery for me. Let's see. Detour was not on any of our lists, but I think that's a magnificent film. And then also Facing the Crowd didn't come up. So that's something. So shall we go ahead and get to favorite film?
Yes.
Our best picture? Why don't you go ahead?
Okay.
Because I'll lose my voice.
So, mine is The Heiress. My runners-up very quickly are Diamonds in the Night and War and Peace, which I won't harp on since I've already discussed them previously, but The Heiress for me was a dream come true, the fact that it was being released. Wyler has never been better than in his more... He's known for his bigger, like, Ben-Hur-style things, but... For me, he is never better than when he is in an intimate setting with one of his favorite actresses, and Olivia de Havilland is one of the most beautiful women ever to grace the silver screen, but she convinces you that she is ugly in the movie, which is something pretty astonishing. It looks beautiful. You've never seen staircases like that before. And the last 20 minutes, I love how I'm still going over in my head if I am happy or if I am sad about those last 20 minutes, which is the mark of a masterpiece.
And masterpiece it is. I don't like to give the big... I don't have an elaborate rating system, but I don't like to give 10 stars or 10 out of 10 or 5 stars just because I think that's reserved for some of the greatest films of the era, the decade, the year. So I don't give that out that much, but on rewatch, I gave this one a perfect score. I think it is almost a perfect movie, and I agree, Wyler is at his best when he's working with really good actors, and you can't name many trios better than the leads in this performance, and boy, the fireworks when they play off each other, and yeah, de Havilland, you know, I don't like the saying, hell hath no fury than a woman scorned, just because I think we've kind of gotten past that. They're women are women, but in this case it actually does hold true, but it's developed well, and he really owns it, and de Havilland too, her performance, I mean, she really, you can see that arc, it's diagrammed, it's gorgeous, she is fantastic, and she sells it, and yes, those last 20 minutes are really quite something, even when you know what's coming, when you've seen it before. So that's my choice as well. And my runner-up was Notorious. We talked about that. It was quite a release. And quite a film, I should say. And then Funny Games. I know we haven't mentioned that too much, For me, it's a very, very fascinating experimentation, and it's not something I expected to like on rewatch, but it works actually better the second time, I think, when you get over the shock and you can kind of see what he's doing there a little bit, see the experiment. Also, it was a good release. There was a really interesting interview with him, and I think Funny Games is deserving of being in the collection, and is one of my favorite films.
Oh yeah, it was a great release. His interview was absolutely fascinating. The part where he mentioned that three of the four leads are dead now, and you could see that he was actually grieving his friends during the interview. It was very, very touching.
It was and that's pretty amazing, because this is really not that old of a movie, but three of the four main characters are gone. And that's another example where you have a small setting. It's really just like The Heiress. I'm not comparing this to The Heiress in the slightest, but except for the fact that it's just one location, basically. But it really works for me. And that's it. That's 2019 up through June. So let me just run through some of the people in the group. So Jesse liked Detour. Shelley liked The Heiress. Nick Ebert liked Mikey and Nikki, so I'm glad that got a shout. Kevin went with Funny Games. And let's see, Jared went with, he just said May. So, okay. Rod liked Blue Velvet. Same. Oh, Jared then posted later Blue Velvet. Fred said Notorious and Blue Velvet Tie, which is hard to argue with. Michael Hutchins said War and Peace. And Josh Wilson said 24 Frames. And Josh Brunsting said favorite one is One Sings, the Other Doesn't. So a good variety there. I think that speaks to the strength of the year, don't you?
Yes, I concur wholeheartedly.
All right. Well, it's tough to switch gears from that. Let's just talk a little bit about the news. Some of the stuff that's happened since we last recorded. And do you have any thoughts about Godzilla Spine 1000 since it's settled a little bit?
I have not watched the old Godzilla movie since I was a kid, but when I was a kid, I had all the action figures. I even had an action figure of the Smog Monster. So I'm very curious to revisit and see how fun they are. So it would not have been my choice for Spine 1000, and I don't think it was many people's first choice, but it is a solid choice nonetheless, and I am looking forward to revisiting all of them 20 years later.
Ah, that's good. Well, since I did not grow up with them, I've seen the first one, but I've seen that. I actually watched the Criterion Edition as my first viewing of that. So I've seen, I think I saw the MST3K or one of those episodes. In fact, I know I have.
It's Godzilla versus Megalodon, I think.
Yeah, I think there are a couple, but I can't remember which ones cross over with the set. But I do think it's awesome that there's a Criterion MST3K crossover. I'm not expecting to love these. I'm expecting them to be guilty pleasures at best and enjoyable watches. I don't know if I can get through the set, but I did notice that Amazon had a price drop over this last week. It was got down to $149, I think it was. So who knows? It might drop again. I think it's special. It's not my favorite choice. But that's one thing where, with the wish list, everybody has their choice. Godzilla, there are probably a lot of people, a lot of really, really big Godzilla fans that are very, very happy.
Yeah, people have been waiting for this set for 2 or 3 years at this point. So it's nice that they're doing it properly.
So yeah, don't hate me, but I'm going to say, I'm happy for the people that are happy. So there you go. Okay, moving on. We had a closet video a week or two ago. It was Jacqueline Noval and John Early, and they're comedians. I don't know them very well. Maybe you do?
I do not. And I don't want to after watching the video.
That's funny. Well, John Early made the joke about going back in the closet, which I'm sure a lot of people have been tempted to say. And he said that was too easy. So you didn't like it?
It was fine. I liked... she picked The Uninvited, so how can I hate anyone who picks The Uninvited? That said, they were fine, I guess.
Yeah.
There was no real he had seen movies that she had not seen, and she had seen movies that he had not seen.
Yep.
They did not seem to be having a conversation with one another, and then the last little bit had this moment when he starts talking about female trouble, where she genuinely seems to look at him with something close to disdain.
Oh, really?
And I was like, huh. So, there have been worse people in the closet, but I certainly didn't glean too much from this particular video. What about yourself?
I didn't enjoy his little diatribe, I guess you'd call it, about female trouble, because I like female trouble, and I thought it was interesting how he called out the mother trying to raise her straight kid up as gay, and how subversive that was for the time. I don't think he used that word, but so I did not notice her disdain. maybe she just has that look. But you're right. It was okay. It was fine. You can tell they're film people. They love film, but they're not like film snobs. So yeah, I think a couple times they said, "Oh wow, this film's on Criterion." So they're not as up on, in loop on what's out. But yeah, it was enjoyable. They were fun. And then we had another one. I haven't seen this too much, but there was a studio visit with Danielle Matrion, who is a, as she'd call it, an aerosol artist, not a graffiti artist, not a street artist. She does murals, but she uses aerosol. So they have the same tool as street artists and graffiti artists. But she's not Banksy. But she did the Do the Right Thing little cover, really. She spray painted and they took a photo, and she talks about that process. And I did enjoy that. What'd you think?
Yeah, I thought it was very, very nice. I loved her street art so much. The woman with the blue face that was up on the building, I thought was absolutely
gorgeous.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And I so enjoyed the bit at the end where it showed people on the streets interacting with the Do the Right Thing wall. I was like, aww.
Very cool, yeah. It's also, I was, of course, thinking about the fact that we got this leaked because we saw, I think we actually got it leaked from Spike Lee, but it's out in the open. You know, anybody could have walked by it and say, yeah, I know they like their secrecy, but they were willing to compromise that for a really, really stunning cover. And I still, it's on top of my to-watch stack on the TV, and it looks magnificent on the, reprinted, really. Really a photograph. So yeah, that seeing her process was interesting. And I don't know her as a person, I don't know her art, but I agree that one especially was really stunning.
Yeah, I didn't know that they did it outside of 40 Acres and a Mule, which of course is fitting. I just had no idea.
Yeah. So, and I also want to quash a rumor, which I think we've sufficiently quashed in our group. Actually, no, we more than have. So the cook, the thief, the wife, and her lover played at the Riverside Theater in the UK. I forget the city, but it was sponsored by Criterion. So that got picked up by our little social media sphere, and they said, oh, look at this. It's coming to Criterion. But it's not, or at least that's not what this means, I should say. What happened is it played. So Neil McGlone is a producer for the Criterion Collection, and if you look, he's thanked on every film in the booklets, and he's actually a friend of mine. So he's a really great guy, and he runs a theater, and so he, through his connection with Criterion, he got them to sponsor the screening. But that's all it is they sponsored it just to help Neil out, or maybe to support the film as well. So he actually posted in the group that it doesn't mean anything, so chill. So yeah, that's. But I could see if, I think the issue is materials. So if somebody scanned and got that, a good print of The Cook, the Thief, the Wife, and Her Lover, I think it could make it to Criterion. It's surprising that nobody has, but I think the Greenaway works have not been given much proper treatment. Although that one was very popular at the time, so I could see it doing well. So, do you like the film?
It's fine. I haven't seen it in over a decade, and I think that he is a director who, at his best, makes the more perverse parts of the movie not seem perverse because they just feel natural to the film itself. And I don't feel like The Cook, the Thief, the Wife, and Her Lover quite, threads that needle, or I didn't when I saw it a decade ago. That said, I would watch the hell out of it if it got released.
Yeah, well, I disagree. I mean, well, I don't disagree. I mean, you're lukewarm. I do like the film a lot, and I think it's but I've seen it in the last 3, 4, or 5 years, and I think it is a special, especially in our, we'll just say, modern society, and yeah, that's all I'll say.
Yeah, that's kind of why I want to watch it again.
Yeah, it actually holds up in a lot of ways, and plus it's the one of the best food porn movies. And actually, I was meaning food porn as in showing off a lot of food, but there's a lot of the description fits in another way as well. There's that airplane again. Maybe they are coming to take me away. There was also the final film by Agnes Varda. I can't say the Agnes as well as our good friend Erica Rulane. But yeah, Agnes Varda's final film is Varda by Varda, which is a documentary about herself by herself. And yeah, it's really, it still hurts that we lost her. But it is playing at the New York Film Festival, and it is credited to Criterion, or to Janus Films, I believe. I have to double check. That's only fitting. I mean, I think her final film about herself.
Aaron, the plane's pretty loud. Maybe we should wait 10 seconds so you can cut it out.
Boy, that the plane. The plane, the plane.
All right, it's better now.
for me to call out Hervé. I think it's about herself. I guess it is. So, makes sense for it to come out on Criterion. I'm sure you're looking forward to this, right?
Oh, I cannot wait. I find it wonderful that up until this point, it's very odd, up until this point in history, most of our classic filmmakers, we consider their final projects, you know, less than or, you know, not quite up to par. But, like, you look at 24 Frames, which was released earlier this year, it's a beautiful encapsulation of Kiarostami's entire work of art, not just in film, but his photography as well. And then here we have Faces, Places, and Varda by Varda as a summation of her incredible career, not just with photography, but also with documentary and film. What more could we ask for? It's a beautiful exclamation point to the end of her career, and I can't wait to see it.
Same here, ditto. And Faces, Places did not make Criterion, and that's okay, that's fine, but I think it would be almost a crime if this didn't, so maybe not a crime, not Rafifi or breaking into your ex-boyfriend's place to get the Umbrellas of Cherbourg. So on that note, speaking of documentarians, we lost a titan this week. That was D.A. Pennebaker, who is very prominent on Criterion, and I didn't realize how old he was, but it makes sense. I think he was 94 when he passed. So as we like to do, let's pay tribute. Do you have a favorite Pennebaker movie?
It doesn't get better than Don't Look Back, right? That said, I assume you're probably going to want to talk about that or Monterey Pop. My first movie by him is Elaine Stritch at Liberty. I saw it when I was, in college, and it swept me away, and it made me such a huge fan of both Elaine Stritch and Pennebaker. So, It's one of his lesser-known works. I think it won an Emmy, but you kind of have to hunt it down. But it's more than worth the effort. It's intimate, it's beautiful, and I give it 2 thumbs way up. Now, please feel free to talk about all of the amazing music stuff that he did.
You know, I think the music stuff kind of speaks for itself. I think that, you know, as you mentioned, Don't Look Back, Monterey Pop. I know he did Ziggy Stardust. He did a few others. But I'm going to call out, I've said call out like 20 times on the show so far. So I'm going to mention The War Room, which is one of the best political documentaries. And I think now that we're, and it was not agenda-based. It really was cinema verite. It was chronicling the Clinton campaign in 92 when he won the election. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really become the template which other political documentaries are judged by, at least in my opinion. I think it because it doesn't take a stand. It lets the viewers just see how the process plays out. And I personally, even though I have my political opinions, I have people I like and don't like, I like documentaries like that. There was another one, Knock Down the House, which was a little bit agenda-based, but mostly just capturing a moment, and I liked that a lot, too. And I'm not comparing that with The War Room, but I'm just saying that's the, you can see a through point from that, from Pennebaker's work to that. So, yeah, I think... And Elaine Stritch, as you mentioned, I think he's not just about musicians. He did a lot of fantastic work, and yeah, he's a true unique voice that a unique vision, because he did capture a lot of interesting subjects in his documentaries.
You bring up a good point. The diversity of his oeuvre is just incredible. The fact that he could go from the music stuff to The War Room to Elaine Stritch to doing a retrospective on his music work is just incredible.
Yeah, but don't get me wrong, he did a shitload of music documentaries.
Yes.
So that kind of is his legacy, I think, and that's fine. But good mentions. So, okay, let me just check time. Hour and an hour. You want to just give real quick short takes, or should we just get in a piece of flair?
Entirely up to you, my friend. You're the one who can't be.
That's right. I'm the person that tells people what to do. How about a quick short take?
All right, perfect. Would you like to go first?
No, please, guests first, always.
All right, so for The Odyssey, I just finished The Hedwig and the Angry Inch Blu-ray, and I had never seen it before. Somehow I had missed it over the course of my life, and what a lovely... lovely movie. I love the specificity of the character and how wild the premise is. The music is super duper awesome. It's just great. I can't believe it's taken me so long to get to it in my life. Realistically, the reason I didn't see it was, have you ever seen Short Bus, Aaron, or do you know anything about it?
I have, yeah. John, yeah, the same director, yeah.
So it came out when I was, I think, in senior year of high school or first year of college, and I was snowed in New York City in a blizzard with one of my best friends and my best friend's boyfriend, who I had never met before. My best friend said, let's put on this movie Short Bus, and then promptly fell asleep, leaving me with this man who I had never met before watching unsimulated sex on screen. It was pretty traumatic.
Yeah, yeah. And so you would not have that same experience with Hedwig.
No, exactly. But I think that's sort of why I had avoided Hedwig up until this point. And what a shame, because I missed out on a great, great movie with great music.
Yeah, but the plus side is you got to see it in a great transfer, and you got to see it many years later on Criterion. Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. I want to watch the features. In fact, this is one that my wife loves. Yes, my wife too. she loves, and so I've left it downstairs because I know they have like a reunion, and
I want to watch. Reunion is incredible.
It seems like it would be. I want to watch those with her, and we just haven't gotten around to it. But mine, I'll be brief just for brevity. But mine is Saraband. It's from the Bergman box set, and that's as far as I've gotten so far. So I need to make a little more progress on the box set, and soon I'll get to the film trilogy, which I've only seen one of those. So those will be a good discovery. But Saraband is the sequel to, sort of the sequel to, Scenes from a Marriage. At least it has the same characters, but it's really not a sequel to that. I mean, it has other characters, and it's a bigger story, and it's. Yeah, it kind of takes that as a launching pad and then goes into its own direction. I guess you could say it summarizes a lot of the work between those two actors and Bergman. Special movie. I had seen it actually when it came out, so that shows how old I am. But I had not seen Scenes from a Marriage or a lot of other Bergman aside from his major ones, because this has been now a good, not quite 20 years, maybe 15, 16, 17 years since it came out. So yeah, really, really good film. Highly recommend it. But I think I would, even though I wouldn't really even still call it a sequel, I would recommend you watch Scenes of a Marriage first before seeing these characters again. And that's the show. But I've actually come to love Piece of Flair. It's only been almost 100 episodes, but I really love Piece of Flair. Do you have a Piece of Flair? This is just anything that's not Criterion, audience.
I do. Have you ever read the work of Jean Kerr before?
I haven't, and I don't... Is she related to Deborah Kerr?
No, she is not. She is this little known today, but in the 1950s and 60s, she was a very, very popular short story writer and playwright. And I have been diving into her work of late and have found her just so wonderful. Her essays are essentially David Sedaris if he was a depressed married woman. So it has that style of humor, but it's this woman who is married to a theater critic who is writing plays herself, and her just dealing with her children and life in New York City. Her first collection of essays, Please Don't Eat the Daisies, it's called, is brilliant. Her follow-up, Penny Candy, is even better. You can find them on Amazon for, I think, like 85 cents, because they're the old things. She wrote a play called Mary Mary, which I am also currently reading, and she's funny, she's witty, she's delightful. I'm going to quote her in my life and then take credit for all of the quote. No, I'm kidding. But she, her voice is brilliant, beautiful, and she merits rediscovery in 2019.
Awesome. I just pulled up her Amazon, and you're right. She, the old stuff, as you put it, the old things, you can get those for cheap. Yeah, which is a statement on books. Books are pretty cheap these days. Well, mine is, speaking of watching stuff with my wife, well, I'll back up a little bit. We were on vacation, and I put on 5 Feet Apart, which I wasn't expecting much from that. That's really a romantic comedy using cystic fibrosis as the subject. It's kind of like The Fault in Their Stars. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, but not as good.
Okay, well, I was going to take the opposite approach. I don't like Fault in Their Stars, so we'll just leave that there. So that almost turned me off of that. I have a friend who has CF, so I watched it more just because I think it raises awareness of the disease, and that it's important for that reason, and it's worth seeing, and I also wanted to just see how accurate it is based on what I see from my friend and in my readings. And I thought it was pretty much a, I don't want to say formulaic, but a trite romantic comedy. It was not great. It was decent. The male lead was not that good, I thought, but I was really taken aback by the female lead, and that was Haley Lou Richardson. She was really good. So, and that's not my piece of flair. This is still a setup, but I'd say, unlike Fault in Their Stars, her performance elevated the movie and made it a little better because she was just so genuine and real in it. And
yeah, I remember, she plays the best friend in Edge of 17, and I like her quite a lot in that.
And she also played the Hooters girl in Support the Girls, and she, a different role for her. I mean, she was really, really funny in that. And so as it happens, we had, my wife wanted to watch Columbus by Koganada, and so that's been sitting by the TV. So after I finished 5 Feet Apart and I raved about her performance, I was like, well, let's watch this. So I had a Haley Lou double feature. And I'd seen this a few years ago, so we watched The Oscilloscope because we have that circle of trust. So it was a rewatch for me, and a first time watch. And I didn't tell Andrea about Koganada's Ozu influence because that would have scared her off. And I figured she would enjoy it, and she did. She really liked it. But boy, Haley Lou's performance was really amazing in that too, and I really think she's quite a unique, really an up-and-coming actress. And it turns out Koganada's making another movie with her and Colin Farrell, so look out for that. But as I mentioned earlier, that I don't like to give out perfect scores, I'm giving a perfect score to Columbus on rewatch. I think it's almost a perfect modern movie. I think it's paced perfectly. Some people might say it's a little slow. I think it's just gorgeous, and I love how he channels Ozu, and using the locations of Columbus, Indiana are just the perfect, I guess, canvas to do that with. The characters, it's really, as Andrea put it, it's about filial piety, and I think there's something in that film that everybody can relate to, and in some capacity, and yeah, it's just really moving. And if you haven't seen Columbus, I know it's a couple years old, please watch it. I think it's one of the best movies of the decade. So yeah, that was a fun rewatch.
Well, that's tough to follow, probably. So I'm going to add it to my list.
All right. Well, I know Scott and I doesn't like it, so you might not like it, but think it's been. You like Ozu, right?
Of course, and we've synced up on most of our favorite movies of the year, so I trust your taste.
Well, if you don't like it, don't blame me, but I do want to hear your reaction, so please share it with us. So with that in mind, the show's over. So thanks, Robert, for joining. This has been fun.
Thank you, Aaron. I hope that everything gets fixed.
Oh, yeah, my leaky water. It'll get fixed, I'm sure. Where can people find you?
Oh, gosh. They can find me on Instagram at Robert Taylor, writer of stuff, or they can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/Bob Taylor. But I will say hi and respond. I don't tweet, unfortunately.
And of course, Criterion Odyssey, and I'll put the link in the notes to your blog. I'll link to your Hedvig, but yeah, you've been regularly putting those out. I guess maybe, I don't know if you've done one for every release yet, but it seems like you've got the majority.
I am up to Hedvig is coming out tomorrow, which will be 3 days before the final version of this is posted, so it'll be out now. And
it's out now.
Yeah, so I am up to Hedvig. I am finishing Europa as we speak.
Oh, cool. And I, by the way, I did this for my Criterion Blues blog a long time ago, and one time I tried to do it for all the new releases, and it's not easy.
Oh my gosh, it's so stressful.
But it's fun, though. Yes. So I love your dedication. I'm curious if you'll keep going after the year's over. So,
I will not. But well, it will be maybe a year I will always remember.
Watch enough so you can do this episode next year.
Perfect.
Always a pleasure, Robert. It's been too long, so thank you for your participation and your support. And this is Criterion Now on the 25th frame. Please support our Patreon. We have some fun stuff coming up. We have actually next week will be our November releases, so there'll be another episode soon after this one. And looking forward to it, so... Take care.
Bye.